episode is brought to you by Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
So, Trevor, I really love this collection of short stories by Stephen King. I mean, it really doesn't read like his other stuff, but
Jeremy,
it's close. I just hear him in the narration.
Hey, yeah. It's not Stephen King we're reading this week.
Huh? What do you mean?
Trust me, it's not Stephen King.
But it sounds just like Stephen King. Like, well, who is it then?
It's not Stephen King, though. It's Joe Hill.
What? No, that's just a pseudonym.
It is a pseudonym, but it's his son.
Hold on a sec. You mean to tell me that Stephen King has a son, and he grew up to be a horror writer just like his dad, and he writes just like his dad so that the narrative voices are the same? Okay.
Yeah, no, it's his son. Like, Barnes & Noble confirmed it for me last week. I was there, and they had a big display of Stephen King, and it said that Stephen King is Joe Hill's dad.
Hold on a second. So what has Joe Hill done that I might have known?
Well, he's done a lot of stuff. He wrote Lock and Key. He did that book Nosferatu. It was turned into an AMC show starring Zachary Quinto, which you may remember as Spock, not Spock. He also did Horns.
That movie with the grown-up Harry Potter? Man, that was some weird shit.
Yeah, but that's him. I mean, he's Stephen King's son. And today we're supposed to talk about his short story collection, 20th Century Ghosts.
Well, fuck me.
Please no.
Hi, and welcome to Slay House Publishing's Lit Bits. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Trevor.
And in this episode, we're going to talk about Mini King, Joe Hill.
I don't know if he'd appreciate being referred to as Mini King.
Okay, well, fair enough. Let's just call him Steve 2.0.
Like a new and improved version. I like it.
Yep. His monsters and his ghosts, I think, are a little bit more complex than King's.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen King had some classical monsters. He really gave them a lot of humanistic characters and characteristics, but I think Hill just takes it a little bit further. He really elevates a lot of the monsters. Like Manx in Nosferatu isn't just a vampire, but he's a vampire with a car, obsessed with Christmas, and only takes little kids.
Wait a second. Is Manx obsessed with Christmas, or is his car obsessed with Christmas?
I didn't write this script, Jeremy, so fuck you.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. We should blame the writer. Like his Daniel Radcliffe character, who becomes a monster, then uses the horror to exact his revenge. But I don't know if, like, him being the monster is actually the scariest part of that book, Horns.
No. It's definitely the horror rockabilly protagonist in Heart-Shaped Box, obviously modeled off of Rob Zombie. That's the scariest part. His actions directly caused his personal haunting in that book.
Okay, so he's done some comics and he's done some novels, but we aren't talking about those today. We're talking about Hill and his short story collection, 20th Century Ghosts. So maybe we should start with a brief biography of Joe Hill.
I agree.
It's interesting that his personal website hasn't been updated. Like, I was looking at that just the other day, and it talks about him not being on Twitter very much and being more on Instagram, but actually if you follow him on either social media, he's more on Twitter now, and it doesn't look like they've updated the website since 2017. But it does say that he gave himself the pen name to succeed more on his own merits than his family name. He didn't want to be known as King, which I find amusing. I mean, I can totally see that, like him walking into his creative writing class and his professor being like, "What's your name?" And he says, "Joe King." And he says, "You look like Stephen King." No, I'm not Stephen King. "Okay, well, you look like him." No, my name's Joe Hill. "Well, okay, let's turn in our first short story assignments, everybody." So he goes and he turns in his first short story assignment, and the professor's like, "You know, really, I see some room for improvement on this." And then he's like, "Are you kidding me? I'm Stephen King's son." He's got numerous awards. Yeah, go ahead.
He was just Joe King.
He was just Joe King. Exactly. Pun, pa-pum, pun.
Dad joke of the day right there. Yeah, he's got a lot of awards, right? I mean, 20th Century Ghosts was a national bestseller. What other awards has he got?
I knew you'd ask me that. He's won, like, Bram Stoker Awards. He's won Saturn Awards. He's the, you go on his website and you go on like his Wikipedia page, there's just a whole host of awards that he's actually won.
Yeah, World Fantasy Award.
World Fantasy Award, yeah.
Like his stuff, it seems like as though Stephen King is putting out like just a ton of stuff. I mean, he's one of the most prolific masters of horror. And here's Joe Hill, who has a slightly smaller output, but a lot of his stuff is getting a lot of awards and a lot of critical attention, which I think is really impressive for a younger writer of a new generation of horror.
I think so, too. And in fact, for me, it feels almost like he really paid attention to his dad. Like, and studying and learning about Stephen King himself, you know, you hear these stories. And Stephen King was an avid reader growing up, and he really paid attention to the way stories and books that he was reading were being crafted, and he really emulated that in his own writing. And it seems almost like Joe Hill has done this too. He's kind of looked at the craft of his father, but then he stood on his shoulders and he's like, wait a second, I'm going to do more. And I'm going to try and put out something with just as much quality and just as much resonance as what my father has done, just maybe not as scattershot as what my father has done.
Yeah, I agree. I really have some thoughts about some of these stories that we read from this collection, but we'll get to those in a second. Joseph Hillstrom King, without the umlaut over the O in his middle name, if you're wanting to spell this for, you know, your, I don't know, high school reading test or something. He was born June 4th, 1972 in Herman, Minnesota. And
Is that Minnesota? Did I type Minnesota for Maine?
Yeah.
Oh,
did
shit.
You?
Yeah.
I'm going to retake that.
No, it's... I kind of like the joke, but...
Herman, Maine? It's Herman, Maine?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Did I... Do I not know my states?
No, I think you do. I don't know. Maine is M-E.
Yeah.
Maine is M-E, so you're right.
Okay. I'm having a crisis right now. We should probably save this for, like, the outtakes or something, because
like
this is great.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and he does have an umlaut in his since you're retaking it.
I'm sorry. He
no,
does have an umlaut.
Yeah, the umlaut. I just didn't know how to do the umlaut in the.
I got it. Okay, I'm gonna retry. Joseph Hillstrom King, with an umlaut, for those of you who are taking notes, was born in June 4th, 1972, in Herman, Maine, and grew up in Bangor, Maine. At nine, he was in his dad's and George A. Romero's film Creepshow. He married his wife, whom he met at Vassar, had three kids, then divorced, and he's now married to publisher Gillian Redfern.
So what's weird about that is his wife is given, her last name is King as well. So I don't know if they're just referring to like her with her married name or if she also happened to have the name King. It sounds a bit incestuous. But isn't it a big cliche that he married his publisher?
I mean, how else do you get published?
That's true. That's true.
Unless you go to Slay House Publishing. We're looking for stories. Send them.
Yeah, and we promise we won't sleep with you or marry you.
Unless you're really hot. No, don't. Don't. I regretted it as soon as I said it. I'm sorry. I'm married. I'm very devoted.
So am I. And we're married to two different women. So, you know, there's that. So you're definitely double safe. And I think both of our Wayne Howard studio guys are married as well, too.
Yeah. Nobody's going to leer at you, I promise. Getting away from that little tangent there. You know, like we said at the beginning of the episode, he's known for Horns, starring Daniel Radcliffe. I would say that's probably where most of his career has really taken off in terms of his reception. That's certainly where I kind of found him first, except for Lock and Key, which I was a really big fan of. I didn't even realize who Joe Hill was at the time. It's really kind of funny. I was reading Lock and Key, which I love as a graphic novel. I'm a really big fan of comic books. And I felt like it was very Stephen King-like, the story. And it was only many years later that I actually put two and two together.
So what's really interesting is that his first book published was Heart-Shaped Box, and then his second or third book was Horns, but it was also the first book to get a book deal. And then Lock and Key came out, I want to think, before, because before that, because Heart-Shaped Box was published in, like, 2006. And then his collection of short stories, his different short stories, were all published in, like, the late 90s to early 2000s. So that's kind of an interesting timeline, because you're right, I think Locke and Key made him famous, but that was not his first rodeo. It was kind of after he had started.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at many of the stories that we're looking at for 20th Century Ghosts, this book was, I think, first published in the United States in the late aughts. But most of them were actually published before in other places in the 90s, late 90s into the aughts, and then collected as a book. And from the afterword that Joe Hill gives us, it seems as though he actually had a little bit of a difficult time getting this stuff collected in the first place. And it was, thanks to some publishers in the UK that this book even kind of exists. So,
oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have time to cover all the stories in the collection today. So we're going to cover three of them, right? We're going to cover his short story, Best New Horror, his short story, 20th Century Ghosts, and his short story, The Black Phone. So do you want to tell us what each story is kind of about, or at least one or two of them?
Sure, I'll give it a crack. Best New Horror is about a horror publisher who is looking to put out his annual book on Best New Horror. And he receives a submission from a mysterious figure who he has trouble tracking down. And when he finally does track him down, seems like maybe he's part of some kind of hillbilly murder cult?
Yeah, so the story works on a couple of different levels. Not only does it have a real surreal kind of atmosphere in it, but it's also kind of meta, because if you go to your local bookstore, there really is a Best New Horror anthology that, at least if not anymore, it used to come out just about every year.
Yeah, in fact, these anthologies have become somewhat popular in recent years, and we're seeing some of a resurgence, if you will, of new horror anthologies. I think Best New Horror was originally published and edited by Stephen Graham Jones someone else, I think.
Yep.
In any case, 20th Century Ghost is a short story about a young woman who died in a movie theater and continues to come back and haunt the movie theater. And the theater's current owner is worried about what might happen to her if the theater has to close.
Okay.
And then The Black Phone is about a young boy who is kidnapped by an obese man and kept in the basement, where there is a phone that is disconnected from everything but rings with the calls of the dead.
Cool. Very cool. That's always a fun time, to have a phone that rings from the calls of the dead.
I really wish that my phone would ring with more calls from the dead, because right now it only seems to ring with people who want something from me, or they want to try to sell me some insurance, and I'm really just not interested in an extended car warranty.
I was going to say,
how's
your car warranty?
Please stop calling me.
Yeah.
Please.
Would you like to save money on your
student
loans?
No, I don't. I don't want to. I would much rather have a president just get rid of the student loans. That's an entirely different problem, though.
Yeah, it's a totally different podcast. Yeah, one we might tackle.
Not all of us have Stephen King money over here.
We're trying.
Is what I'm saying.
We're trying. And if you like what you hear, contribute to Slay House Publishing.
Please,
so we too can
help me
pay off our
not
student loans.
Lose my pants.
You don't want to see him without his pants, really.
Nobody does. Not even my wife.
So now that we know what all three stories are about, do you want to talk a little bit about the themes that you kind of discovered in reading these stories?
I really would, actually. I wrote to you that one of my favorite stories from this collection was actually 20th Century Ghost. I think that it is a tremendous story, because what this story is, of course, there's this ghost, right, that's haunting this theater. And in that way, I think that the ghost is kind of representative of a lot of other similar gothic stories. But what's interesting from this story, I think, is the way in which Joe Hill tries to explore that human connection that we kind of build to places, or that we build to the past, and the sense of a kind of continuous loss of the past or a loss of history as we continue to push our society for something newer and something fresher. There's always this danger of for some reason or another, losing the past. And so what 20th Century Ghost, I think, really does very well is center in on this guy who's not only worried about whether or not his movie theater is going to survive the immediate future as movie theaters kind of fall out of vogue, something I think we can definitely relate to nowadays in this weird pandemic time.
Yeah, true, true.
But he's also worrying about what that means for local history and specifically for this ghost that is haunting his theater. What happens to this ghost who happens to be an enthusiast of movies if the movie theater in which she lives kind of breaks down? So it deals with that human connection, I think, to personal history and strives, I think, to use horror in a way that connects us kind of to the here and the now and the problems that we have as human beings living in a society that seems to keep changing around us. It's something that I think we see a lot in postmodern fiction, especially. And I would definitely say that Stephen King's son, Joe Hill, I almost messed it up. Because I confuse him with Stephen King so much. His style is so similar.
Well, if you want to be safe, you could say Joe King or Stephen Hill.
I could do something like that. Yeah. It would be very disrespectful, though.
Yeah, six of one, half a dozen.
But I think that, you know, what he does and what a lot of postmodern horror is trying to do is trying to kind of position us in the space we live in this society where things feel very uncertain and, you know, try to connect us back to something we know. I think that's very popular in postmodern fiction. Help me out.
So that seems to me like a strong theme, not just in postmodern fiction, but also what the 20th century was about and kind of what the early 21st century is about that hanging on as times drastically change. And so one of the things that I want to talk about personally as someone who knows craft and who looks at craft, I want to look at how he achieves this through his craft. And one of the things I'm going to be focusing on, get ready for a nerd alert, is something called The Objective Correlative by T.S. Eliot. So
nerd alert.
Okay, that's fine. The Objective Correlative is all about how things are shown through images to represent the internal. So if you look at the kinds of movies that he's showing, if you look at the quality of this theater and this story that he's talking about, this ancient theater, like I can picture it, like this old Rialto theater, that used to be in downtown El Dorado, Arkansas, these old theaters with the broad curtains that would pull back to reveal the screen. Some of these were old playhouses that were converted into movies. That's what I picture when I see this theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so his attention to detail and his attention to the images is all about calling to mind this falling away of this old theater and how this guy would, this is the main plot of the story, the main character is struggling with keeping this theater alive, but he makes it personal because it's not just about keeping the theater alive. Right. It's keeping the ghost alive that's in the theater. And another cool thing that Hill does in this is that early on in the story, he talks about how the main character can know if somebody has really seen the ghost or not by the way they describe their encounter with the ghost. Because the people who really try and jump into this, like, this is quintessential horror, this is quintessential ghost story, he knows almost from the minute they open their mouth that they have not seen this ghost that haunts this theater. Because if they had, she wouldn't be anything like that. And that, to me, that detail is tantamount to postmodern ghost stories as we see them now. They're not interested in the old, you know, kind of shock, the old kind of tales. They're interested in something new or something different, something unique that we don't always get with a lot of ghost stories.
Right. I think postmodern horror, more than a lot of other horror that we've seen, you know, postmodern horror is definitely concerned with trying to recombine elements in an interesting way. That's a lot of postmodern horror or a lot of postmodern literature in general, right?
Lots of genre blending.
Yeah, recombining a lot of old ideas in new or surprising ways. I think that's definitely what happens in best new horror, right?
Yes.
Where we have this guy who's, you know, he's read so many horror stories. They all sound pretty much the same. But then he runs across a new horror story from a new horror writer that seems really compelling and just bizarre and strange and startling in a way that many of these other horror writers that are just mimicking the things that have been done in the past don't necessarily do. I think it's really interesting that we keep making comparisons between Joe Hill and Stephen King as writers, because I think that Stephen King, you know, as well, was really, really derivative of other horror writers that came before him in some of his early work. So figures like Richard Matheson, I think, was super influential on Stephen King. And we can see the influence on Joe Hill from writers like Richard Matheson or writers like Stephen King. But I think what Joe Hill is trying to do is bring a new perspective, a fresh perspective that comes from his generation.
So I think,
and using the same tropes, right?
So I feel like you made a good point when you talked about, like, and in case those of you have wondered, Trevor and I have actually already talked about this at length. So we're just trying to bring back into the podcast what it is that we're discussing. So when you mentioned off air that Stephen King to you reminded you a little bit of EC Comics, I'm seeing this too, to a different degree within Joe Hill. So like with Best New Horror, he's combining these surrealistic images, mm-hmm. and he's bending them and blending them together in such a unique way. Like you have this odd short story that we don't actually read, but we're told to through the narrator.
Yeah. We're given kind of a summary of this short story that the editor has found, right?
Right. And then you get this professor comes in and he calls it surreal, but by labeling it surreal, we think it's surreal too. And we attribute that surreality. I don't know. I'm making up words as we go along. We attribute this to the rest of the story. So like this professor says, when he actually meets the author of this short story, this professor had originally like workshopped with the author, I guess, and published it in his lit mag and then was fired for it. And so our editor, main character, our Stephen Graham Jones character, got a hold of this professor, and the professor describes this encounter with this author and his brother. And his brother is like grotesquely fat. And he meets the author and his brother in this little apartment. And while the author is giving his brother a piercing, they are enraptured by this footage that they seem to be watching over and over again of the Jonestown Massacre. And the way that the publisher or the professor describes this scene, it is very just dreamlike. And it's almost like you're outside of yourself. And that's the same exact feeling we get from our main character, the editor, when he's finally reached the end of this story.
Yeah, exactly. The Black Phone plays with some similar tropes as well. You know, the phone call from the dead, I think, is a recurring trope in a lot of horror fiction. And yet we find that particular trope now combined with this story of a child being kidnapped and potentially murdered by a part-time clown.
So you get the illusion there, right? This, you're a little younger than me, so this might have escaped your knowledge, but I'm going to test your knowledge. Who here in this room, in this studio, has heard of John Wayne Gacy?
Someone just told me about that. I think it was Caitlin.
Yeah.
I think Caitlin just talked about it, and I had no idea.
Yeah, he's riffing on John Wayne Gacy in this. John Wayne Gacy was this huge, very, very large man that would dress up as a clown for children's parties, and then he would abduct young men and murder them, and he had something like 30 bodies under his house. So when I read The Black Phone, I'm totally reading John Wayne Gacy in this part.
Hold the phone. 30 bodies?
30-something bodies. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and then what's even more terrifying is that when John Wayne Gacy was convicted and sent to prison, he then drew pictures of clowns, and people bought these clowns, bought these pictures, and paid money for these. Like, you think the
We're
Joker...
We're pulling up video right now
you think
so
the
that I can
Joker
see this.
And
this
Batman
is terrifying.
Is terrifying. Like,
Jeremy, I already have a clown phobia. My mother and father are going to listen to this podcast, and they're immediately going to be like, why are you telling this
Why,
to
hello, Trevor.
Son? I'm going to cry later. That's what's going to happen.
Do you need some melatonin?
Maybe. That's a callback to a joke that is never going to air.
It could air. It could air. We could traumatize people with it, much as we're being traumatized with pictures of John Wayne Gacy right now. So that's who I envision when I picture this black phone.
You know, once more, I think that this is something that Joe Hill definitely draws on. He makes a lot of literary allusions, whether it be to the Stephen Graham Jones edited anthology, you know, in Best New Horror, or the theaters that we've all definitely seen. I mean, here in Arkansas, just locally, I'm thinking of the hotel up north in Eureka Springs, which is allegedly haunted. And then the black phone with John Wayne Gacy. There's another story that we're not going to talk about called, what was it called? I think it was, And Now You Will Hear the Locusts Sing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a riff on Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis.
Yeah, except so another twisted kind of...
Yeah. So it seems like he takes these stories, these kind of... I don't know, call them literary best hits or greatest hits or you know, kind of taking from these very well-known stories.
That are all 20th century, by the way.
Yes, that are definitely 20th century. And trying to relate them to kind of the horror tropes that we see most often. In both Best New Horror and The Black Phone, especially, I think there's this sense of... a kind of resurgence of the anxiety around the rural spaces of America, and especially of divisions of privilege and wealth, because we see a lot of his characters, a lot of the horror that his characters face, come from, whether it be the family that is hard up for money and they're sawing something out in their rural cabin in Maine.
With grandma chained up in the bedroom?
With grandma chained up in the bedroom. In The Black Phone with this morbidly obese part-time clown living with his crackhead brother. And they've got a scary soundproof basement, right? There's this sense of anxiety, whether it be of the division between these rural and urban spaces, or sometimes just the spheres of privilege that sometimes we take for granted. You know, in 20th century ghosts, the theater owner, you know, is also kind of hard up for money, and he has a Steven Spielberg type offered to buy the theater from him, right? So we see a lot of anxiety, I think, from Joe Hill about, you know, these spaces where the division between the haves and the have-nots are so profound, and really kind of the horrors, the everyday horrors that come, not necessarily, you know, from the scary person around the street, but maybe even perhaps the scary conditions that they lived in before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's fascinating for me is this idea, and again, to go back to my little nerd alert, this T.S. Eliot objective correlative, is that from a craft perspective, we see Joe Hill tackling these things through these different images he's including in his stories. And it's this idea that the outside mirrors the inside. So, and I think that's very, very important for horror fiction. I think we have to understand how the outside marries the inside. And the outside can be a number of things like we see here. It can be a callback to a murderous clown. It can be these juxtaposing kind of settings that we're seeing. these people from different round or levels of privilege. So you're right. I think all of that marries into it, and I think his craft is showing that as we're moving on. So, anything else you want to add about Joe Hill? Or,
you know, I really just my summed up thoughts, because I had not read Joe Hill outside of Lock and Key until.
It's very different than Lock and Key, isn't it?
It's very different. And I love Lock and Key.
Me too.
As a graphic novel. But his short fiction, I'm a super fan of this short fiction. I can't get over how much I've really enjoyed reading it for this podcast. If you haven't read it yet, you should absolutely go out and read it. Highly recommend it.
So, that's it, folks. That's our Joe Hill perspective. We might come back and revisit some of his longer works in the future. We might take a deeper dive into Lock and Key. We might take a deeper dive into, I could see rereading, Nosferatu or
Fireman
would be good. I could see rereading any of these. Heart-Shaped Box, that would be a really interesting read. But for now, I think that's good. I wanted to remind some people of everything that we are going to, of course, I should ask Trevor what he thinks about this too, but I'm thinking we open up submissions for the fall anthology in maybe September and run for about a month.
Yeah, if you are interested in contributing to Slay House Publishing's first anthology of horror fiction, really, you should reach out. You should submit a story to us. We'd really love to read your stuff.
As soon as we open submissions, keep checking our social media and keep checking our website, and we should be opening submissions pretty soon.
Jeremy, where can they find us on social media?
So our main website is slayhouse.com. We're under Slayhouse has its own Twitter. It has its own Instagram. It has its own TikTok. It has its own Reddit. We have flooded the market with our brand and our logo. So just when you get on, I assume you can search when you get on any of these social media platforms. Just look for Slay House Publishing, and we should pop right up. And then follow us. And don't forget we've got a new feature where you got to buy me a coffee little thing if you like what you're hearing and want to donate a few bucks to us. We'd be happy
to have it. Hey, Jeremy's got his socks. I would like some new socks too, though.
Yeah, Trevor needs new socks for his this week. The Patreon will go towards his new socks.
All my money went to student loans.
All of his money went to student loans. Also, if you notice, if you were looking at Trevor right now, he's wearing his penny loafers, and so he needs some matching shoelaces.
I'd like some dollar loafers, please.
He would like some dollar loafers. He wants to be able to fold a dollar bill in there, y'all, and put it. So,
hey, what have we got for the next episode?
It could be a real Hellraiser. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Dad joke of the day.
Number two. All right. We'll see y'all. Have a good one.